Good morning. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, October the 26th. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you, by the way, once again for your outstanding support of Wisconsin Public Radio during our recently concluded pledge drive. This is our first Week in Review program since we wrapped up the drive on Monday. So in case you were wondering, more than 7,100 people pledged. And more than 2,068 of them were brand new members to the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Thank you very much. You donated $988,000 to support, to help pay for the programming that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. I know 24 of those new members joined us during last week's Week in Review. I know that because I was conducting a new member challenge, and I promised to pay $10 for every new member, and I ended up with a $240 pledge after that program. So thank you very much for your support of the Week in Review and Wisconsin Public Radio in general. So let's start reviewing the news of the week. We will be welcoming in two guests with different perspectives to talk with you about the biggest stories in politics, statewide, nationally, and internationally. And we welcome your input. What did you What interested you this week in the news? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our Week in Reviewers. Tony Palmieri joins us. He is Associate Professor of Communications at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh, a member of the Oshkosh Common Council, and media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Joy.
And also joining us at the recommendation of Tony Palmieri is Jo Egelhoff. She is editor of foxpolitics.net. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Tony.
Hi, Joe.
Thanks a lot for being with us. This is Joe's first Week in Review, and we're happy to have her here. And Tony Palmieri, a veteran of sorts here, recommended Joe as your editor of foxpolitics.net, which is what exactly, Joe?
Well, it's a news and commentary website, and what I do every morning is gather news from around the state, policy and politics, and send out a newsletter to folks. I get up really early in the morning and gather, 35 to 40 news articles. So folks, especially in this area with not having the Milwaukee Journal or the State Journal or the Cap Times, I think we need better news, and so I try to put it together.
Yeah, and so we have two of you kind of from the East Central or, Eastern or Northeastern part of the state. So welcome. We'll get your perspectives on. Let's start with the state budget, since Governor Doyle is going to be signing that in less than an hour on the UW-Madison campus. Tony Palmieri, what do you think of the budget that we'll have in less than an hour?
I thought this is what we waited 115 days for. I mean, there's no major reform of anything in the state. We remain with this terrible structural deficit. We now find out that we might be able to get a shot and a half in the grocery stores. Jay Heck of Common Cause, I read an email from him this morning where he said we might be called, instead of America's Dairyland, America's Daiquiriland. So, I mean, it's so upsetting on so many levels. And it just seemed to me, Joy, that if you're going to hold out for 115 days, it ought to be about more than preventing an oil company tax or, even expanding of Badger Care. There's got to be something great at the root of a 115-day delay, or at the very least, fix the structural deficit problem. And they did none of that. So very disappointing.
Yeah. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I'd say ditto, ditto. And having been in a common council chair for 10 years, I know what Tony's going to be going through, yeah, because he's impacted there as well in Oshkosh. The big loser was budget reform, as Tom Still said yesterday in his piece, and Todd Berry has said in his new focus. And I just, we can talk about the terrible ramifications of delay, But, you know, we needed to come up, regardless of how long it took, we needed to come up with budget reform. And what if Governor Doyle, instead of having UW folks, UW administrators, and school principals lined up behind him, what if he'd really been hammering at gap accounting for the budget, at a plan to, a 10-year plan to reduce this structural deficit? You know, it just, it sends a different message. And we had three losers. The Senate Dems lost big, as I think we'll talk about mm-hmm. in their change in leadership. The Assembly Republicans, as many have said, cut Speaker Hipsch off at the knees, and it made it very difficult for him to negotiate. So it's time to work on, but once again, on budget reform.
Yeah. Well, what exactly do you want to see in terms of budget reform?
I'd like to see gap accounting so that we're honest with the public about when there's a deficit, and we're honest with the taxpayers about the fact that we're spending too much. And then we've got to be honest about prioritizing. And there are big problems, big disagreements. Different folks think differently about what's important. But we've got to we must have those discussions, and it won't happen until we come into the 20th century, for heaven's sakes, with gap accounting.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you want, Tony Palmieri?
Somewhat. I mean, my representative, Gordon Hintz, voted against the budget, mm-hmm. and I applaud him mm-hmm. for that because he called it Thompson-era budgeting. I mean, we're using the one-time transfer of monies. I mean, that's just completely irresponsible. I mean, as Joe suggests, there needs to be some long-term plan or short-term plan to address the structural deficit issues. I would say, and I'm sure Joe will disagree with this, The moment you take any kind of income tax reform off the table in your budget, you're making reform of the structural deficit very, very difficult. I mean, our income tax system in this state is not progressive. It's essentially flat. But when both sides start off with having that completely off the table, they're in the position of either having to make drastic cuts that we know they're not going to make, or they have to raise an incredible amount in fees, which they are doing and which is regressive. And so they're starting off at a point which makes it impossible for them really to balance this budget in a genuine sense. So I think there has to be major tax reform as part of this effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about what Joe Egelhoff referred to in terms of some of the losers, and that being Senate Democrats. Judy Robson was ousted this week as the Senate Majority Leader. And Russ Decker was put in that leadership position. Apparently, Senate Democrats not very happy with how Judy Robson handled the budget negotiations and budget compromise. What do you think of that, Joe Egelhoff?
Well, I think that's just really intriguing, and it's down and dirty, backdoor, front stoop politics. Some great stuff. Actually, Tony, from your side of the aisle, Ed Garvey is astounded by it. He's worried by the koala effect, and also worried brings out the fact that, you know, this means that AT&T is coming back to the fore, as Russ Decker has pledged that he's bringing back the cable bill. Really great article, I thought, by Kathy Stepp yesterday, talking about what it takes to be a woman in a leadership position, and not necessarily to be tough, but to recognize that everything is a contest and that men want to win. And she said that she thought that the approach of Judy Robson was interesting, the choice after the tough Chuck Koala years, but that it's probably not the approach that the Senate needed. So interesting comments, and I think it was great politics.
Tony?
I thought Judy Robson was in a very difficult position. I mean, the centerpiece of the Senate Democrats' budget proposal was Healthy Wisconsin. But when you've got the Democratic Party governor who won't support it because he allegedly lives in the real world, I mean, at that point, Robson is in a difficult position. Does she keep fighting forward with the Senate Democrats' budget, or does she try and get her Democratic governor's budget passed? And ultimately, she sided with the governor, and she paid for that. It's unfortunate. I do think the Senate Democrats ought to have the integrity to release the votes. I mean, apparently it was a 10-8 vote. I think most Wisconsin citizens would like to know who were the 10 that voted for Senator Decker and who were the 8 that stayed with Robson. The other thing I want to say, Joy, is that it's what does it say about this state that women in the legislature don't last very long in leadership positions? I mean, Mary Panzer, Shirley Krug, and now Judy Robson, I mean, removed very quickly from leadership positions. I mean, and really, in especially in the case of Panzer and Robson, for essentially trying to get business done, for for trying to get budgets passed. And so, you know, I'm surprised that there are not more people in the state expressing outrage at what seems to be differential treatment in male and female leaders in the state.
Well, no outrage, but an email from John in Park Falls who comments, Judy Robson is an excellent senator, but perhaps she wasn't tough enough to deal with the Assembly Republicans. Russ Decker will add considerable muscle. Speaker Hipsch may also be in trouble for not being as stiff-backed as his far-right caucus members would have liked. And you mentioned that, too, Joe Engelhoff.
Yeah, I think Speaker Hipsch is that realist that Tony mentioned Governor Doyle is referring to. And he sees that Russ Decker is going to be a tough opponent. And I think they're ready to... I don't know. You never put the budget behind you, but they're ready to move forward. And that's one good thing about the budget. It's done. Now we can move forward on other stuff. And Speaker Hipsch is ready. Tony, I want to comment about the secret ballot. I've looked that up in connection with the Common Council votes, and you may have as well. But it's actually in the statutes that when a leader is elected among the council, a secret ballot is allowed if there's one request. Now, I don't know if that same statute holds true for the Senate caucus, but
what they did was perfectly legal. There's no doubt about that. But as you know, sometimes things are legal and they still don't pass the smell test.
Well, I think it's not a bad idea, again, to allow them to move forward. And that's what's important now. Let's get going. We got a long, long list of important policy stuff, not the least of which is health care. And, you know, you talk about the healthy Wisconsin. Tony, and we've been talking about this for months and months and months. I mean, why did they even put Robson in that position, dumping that thing in at the last minute? I mean, that was not smart. So it comes home to roost.
Well, let's get going and talk about some other issues and welcome callers as we review the news of the week. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Talking about some state issues now, but we'll move on to some national and international issues as we go along. Talking with Joe Engelhoff, editor of foxpolitics.net, and Tony Palmieri, who is an associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, a member of the Oshkosh Common Council as well. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's your views on the news after 4 o'clock with Ben Marins. Ben and his guest will talk about your thoughts about the week's top news story during your views on the news after 4. We are reviewing the news of the week, as we always do in this 8 o'clock hour on Friday mornings, with two guests from different perspectives, Joe Engelhoff. A new Week in Review guest is the editor of foxpolitics.net, and Tony Palmieri, our other guest, who is an associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, talking about state budget issues. You touched on it, Tony, when we first started, but should the governor veto this provision that allows us to get a shot and a half of booze at the grocery store, this item that was put in the state budget at the last minute?
Well, of course he should veto it. I mean, it's an example of the lobbying gone wild in Madison. No one in the legislature, after 115 days, the fact that we don't even know who was sponsoring this in the legislature tells us how broken our system is. So, I mean, he should have vetoed it already, or at least announced a veto.
Yeah. Hear, hear.
All right. Well, we got agreement on that one. Let me go to Bob and Nina. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Joe. And good morning, Tony.
Morning, Bob.
Tony, or not, Joe knows who I am anyway, so does Joey. My question, getting back to the kind of an alcohol situation, why is raising, this can be a little sore point, why is raising the alcohol tax, beer tax, such a sacred cow in Wisconsin? Why can't we raise it? I mean, our deaths by alcohol are rising so rapidly here in the Fox Valley and actually across the state, and yet somebody has control and somebody is avoiding the issue that, hey, alcohol is causing all these deaths. Why not, you know, try to put a curb on this? Mm-hmm. Using the tax on alcohol.
There was a bill to raise the tax on beer for the first time in a very long time, but that it wasn't a part of the state budget. Why not, Tony?
Well, obviously we have very powerful liquor interests in Madison. But, you know, I don't think that the so-called sin taxes, you know, on cigarettes and alcohol are really going to be the problem to or the answer to our budget problems. You know, again, as I said earlier, at some point the legislature and governor have to take a serious look at taxes in the state, everything from income to corporate taxes and so on. And they're not ready to do that. And then we get into a situation where we raise the taxes on some of these vices, and you know, the very things we're trying to get people to not consume these things as much, yet in order for us to get money for our budget, they have to consume them. So there's a contradiction there.
Tony, twice you've mentioned taking a serious look at taxes, and now I have to respond.
Go ahead.
Because, of course, the other side of that is taking a serious look at expenditures.
Well, that's true.
And taking a serious look at the progressive nature of our statutes, that we allow more qualifiers for Medicaid, for example. We allow more qualifiers for senior care, for another example. And if these are choices that Wisconsin wants to make and consciously makes, so be it. Then we need to raise taxes. But if the state feels that this is indeed tamping down economic development, tamping down commercial activity in the state, we've got to balance those two interests. We've got to balance the progressive nature of our governing with the desire and the results of higher taxes. And so it's you know, that we have what is the pogo? We have found the enemy, and it is us. And that's kind of what Bob would refer to with the alcohol taxes. And Tony, you're exactly right. We can't be raising sin taxes. But gosh, it's so hard for the legislators to do what's right when we out here are hammering them to do impossible things. We want all these services, and we don't want to pay anything.
Well, that's certainly true, and this legislature didn't seem to show any interest in reform of the way we fund anything.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that corrections spending has increased dramatically in the last 10 to 15 years. They didn't take a serious look at that. We at the local level in government really rely very much on shared revenue expenditures. They didn't want to look at that. I mean, nothing was looked at seriously. And I think a big part of this problem is the way we elect our representatives. I mean, the governor promised to have a special session on real campaign finance reform. It looks like he's now breaking that promise.
Yep, it's gone.
So essentially, Democrats and Republicans have created these very safe districts. They spent a lot of time, I believe, paying attention to the people who are supporting their campaigns. And so we're stuck. I mean, we need reform of the politics as well as reform of the budget.
Tony, Joy, may I?
Mm-hmm.
Tony, what do you think about the Iowa system of redistricting?
They do it in a neutral way through
retired judges.
Yeah, I mean that sounds great. I mean, can you imagine a scenario in which all 99 of the assembly districts are competitive?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, why would anyone except the insider special interests? Why would anyone else not want that?
Yeah.
And it seems to me in Iowa and in other states, they have just about every seat competitive.
Well, they're getting closer.
Right.
I don't know about that. But, yeah, it's an intriguing idea, and it's intriguing as an alternative to this radical campaign contribution restrictions. But that's another big story.
Well, let's talk. I'm looking for the story, and I can't find it. Governor Doyle has said he won't call a special session to take campaign finance reform stuff and election reform stuff. You're upset with that, Tony Palmieri?
Well, he did make the promise that he would call such a special session, if I recall correctly. And he has to know, and he has to see clearly in front of him that our system is a complete mess. The idea that he won't call such a special session, I find incredible. You know, if I were advising Jim Doyle, at some point, his administration needs to start thinking about legacy. I mean, say what you want about Tommy Thompson. I disagreed with his administration on probably 90% of the things that they did, but there was some legacy there. They did some major reforms of state government, including budgeting. I think they were mostly negative reforms, but there was legacy. At this point, what is the Doyle legacy going to be?
Oh, contributions from WEAC, contributions from TROHA.
We have to give him credit. He has funded K through 12, but he's done nothing to reform the way we fund K through 12. He has expanded Badger Care. But he shut the door on Healthy Wisconsin, which would be a genuinely, I think, progressive reform for the state. So I think the Doyle people, some people need to say, what do we want to be remembered for in the state?
Yeah. Let me bring in a caller who wants to talk about health care. Ivy in Evansville. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I've been listening to this conversation, and I really think the big loser here are our kids. You say this costs too much to take care of all these kids, and it raises taxes and whatnot. But think about it. I mean, a child that goes to school with poor dental care or sick is not very productive. Neither are workers, for that matter. So I heard the last guest talk about how that people need to just have a healthier lifestyle. Well, kids, they don't know that stuff. And furthermore, if you think about it, if we don't take care of people, like for example, with diseases like tuberculosis, the rise in resistant tuberculosis is due to cases where people with tuberculosis are not followed and taking their antibiotics isn't enforced. I could just see where people have very little health insurance. They go, or they don't have any. They go in and they say, "Okay, take this." There's no follow up.
Right. Thanks, Ivy. The budget, though, does have this Badger Care Plus to provide for more insurance for especially children. Tony Palmieri.
Yeah, I think that was one of the good parts of the budget. But Ivy is correct. I mean, when the Speaker of the Assembly holds out for 115 days, essentially to prevent an oil tax from coming into place, or to prevent the tax on the hospitals, which would have given us more federal dollars. I mean, something's wrong. That doesn't sound like an assembly that really is interested in children's health. So, I think Ivy is incredibly correct and on target here.
Yeah. Joe?
I think that this budget was a great winner for kids. As you said, Joy, more coverage for Badger Care. We're up to 98% of coverage of kids, and those that aren't covered are those that aren't coming in to get coverage. There's more money, significantly more money for schools. There's more SAGE program. There's a tremendous amount of aid here and support for kids. And I would say that if we continue as a state to say that if we don't take care of people via the budget, what does that mean? It's our job as individuals and as parents to take care of kids and not to dump more and more onto the into the government budget. TB, the IV use as an example, which of course is very rare, but the government supports preventive immunizations very, very broadly and does a very good job at that. So much the government does to support at the foundation. And it's up to us as individuals using our freedoms to support our families and our friends' families and our relatives' families and stop the assumption that it's the government's job in every case.
Yeah. Well, maybe Ivy was also thinking of this S-CHIP program or the legislation on a national level that would have provided more health insurance coverage for children that President Bush vetoed, and now the Congress is still trying to make some changes to this to have it pass again. What do you think of that S-CHIP on a national level legislation, Joe?
Well, it actually failed. Well, it passed yesterday, 265 to 142, but it's not veto-proof. And I think that President Bush is just right, that this is contains too much money. And I'll go back to Mark Jefferson's comments in your last hour, Joy, that our approach to health care in this nation has got to balance money for those who can't afford care with a very concerted effort, is an understatement, to control the costs in health care. When costs are zero, the usage is infinite, and Mark talked about that a bit. We've got to employ the many different approaches that will begin to reduce the cost and the utilization of health care. And until that's done, we've got to balance the ever larger ballooning monies that are being asked to dump into healthcare. I think with the president's request of he's actually expanding it to a $20 billion increase over 5 years, as opposed to the $35 billion in the yesterday's plan. And I think he's right at drawing the line.
Tony Palmieri?
President Bush and the Republicans are budget hawks when it comes to children's health, but on Iraq, we get a blank check. I mean, this is just so shameful, in my judgment. The Congressional Budget Office has said that the revised version of S-CHIP has met all of the major objections that the Republicans in the Congress mentioned. And the fact that they're still voting against it, I got to give Tom Petri, the Republican from our district up here in Northeast Wisconsin, has voted with the Democrats on this one. You know, it's time for the Republicans in the Congress to do something for the American people. I mean, the Iraq funding has taken such priority for them that the people at large are now paying the brunt of that. And it's very unfortunate. I think that the S-CHIP as revised really should pass, and the president should sign it.
Let me bring in another caller, Dave in Wanakee. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, I think your guests pretty much spoke it out. I just find it remarkable that the president can ask for $200 billion to throw in a hole in Iraq. We'll end up with throwing more than $1 trillion in there and get nothing but death and mayhem from it. And then he turns around and says, we can't afford the S-CHIP program, which is a drop in a bucket compared to that hole in the sand.
Joe, you want to reply?
Well, we can and should talk about Iraq separately, but I think that this S-CHIP business is not a we can't afford. It's a we shouldn't be spending this kind of money without better reforms on the program. Tony, this is financed with a dollar a pack tax on cigarettes, which is not the way to finance a program, as you said, and you're completely correct. Because what we want to do, I mean, we want to decrease the use of cigarettes. Therefore, we as taxpayers will then. It's not a stable model. It's not a stable model to throw money at a program that we don't have the cost control environment culture.
But while we're waiting for that stable model, we have people in dire need, and I just find it incredible that the president and the Congress are not sensitive to that.
Tony, I'm not at all insensitive, and I'm trying to make less of dire situations. But folks who want health care in America, certainly basic primary health care, which is what S-CHIP focuses on, find a way to get it. Now, that doesn't mean it's right, and it doesn't mean it's done efficiently. But I don't think this $35 billion package is an efficient. Throwing money at the situation isn't the best answer. And I think that's why President Bush is saying, no, we're gonna get this program right, and we're not gonna build it on an unstable foundation.
The fact that the Congressional Budget Office has said all the major objections have been met means that at this point, this is sheer political posturing, and I think it's really shameful at this point. They ought to do the right thing and pass the program. But I agree with you. We need to look for reforms of the way we fund everything in this country. But at this point, that needs to pass. And Dave, I would say, Joy, the caller, is very right. We are spending so much money in Iraq without a firm set of goals that to not pass SCHIP, really, I think it embarrasses us in the eyes of the world. I really do.
So what do you want to see Tony Palmieri Congress do with this request for $196 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, my position for the last year has been that the Democrats ought to do what they were elected to do, which is to find a way to end that war. And if that means pulling the plug on funding, then they should do it. I really think that in the next elections, November of 2008, we're going to see a replay of 2006, that the war, if President Bush has his way and we continue what we're doing, politicians who support this are not going to be successful.
Joe?
Well, I think politicians like Tony need to put together their plan on saving the world from terrorists. But to me, the main story is what Tony presented, and that was the financing. And I think it's really interesting. I heard Dave Obey yesterday, and what is he doing? He vows to hold up the Iraq supplemental,
mm-hmm.
which is I mean, just as Tony said. Finally, someone's doing what they said they believe they're there for. I don't agree with it. But good for Representative Obey.
You probably want them to be budget hawks on Iraq funding, just like with SCHIP, right?
Well, I want them to be successful at addressing the tremendous diplomatic and military challenge in the Middle East. I don't know the answer. It's not to pull out of the Middle East and build a fence and a lid and everything else around the U.S. There's a problem in the Middle East. Diplomacy has not addressed will not address the full problems. I don't know the answer in Iraq, but it's not to cut off funding and pull out and pretend that the Middle East isn't there. That's an irresponsible approach.
We are reviewing the news of the week during this Week in Review program. Joe Egelhoff, editor of FoxPolitics.net, one of our Week in Reviewers, along with Tony Palmieri, associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh. 1-800-642-1234, the number you can use if you'd like to bring up an issue from the news this week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 8:45 right now. Coming up after 9, is Pakistan and not Iran or Iraq the most dangerous nation in the world? Kathleen Dunn will talk with a Pakistani scholar about the current situation there. That's coming up in our next hour. We're reviewing the news of the week with Joe Egelhoff and Tony Palmieri. And let's talk some about Iran in particular, new U.S. sanctions being slapped on Iran. There was a speaker who came to Madison this week who was going to talk about whether a military strike against Iran was inevitable. What do you see happening with this, Tony Palmieri?
What I find kind of extraordinary is that the Bush administration clearly is trying to isolate Iran in the international community, but what is increasingly happening is that our country is isolated. We increasingly are looking under this administration as wanting to solve every problem with force first and ask questions later. The diplomatic initiatives do not seem very genuine. I mean, diplomacy to Condoleezza Rice seems to mean do what we say or else. I mean, that does not seem to be genuine diplomacy. So quite frankly, you know, I talk about this issue with students at UW-Oshkosh, and many of them think that President Bush, who's at, I think, 30% in approval poll ratings, may just see no negatives to not going forward with an invasion. I mean, Americans do rally around the flag. One student told me he may decide to go out in a blaze of glory. I hope that is not true, because I do think we need some genuine diplomatic initiatives here, and we're not getting it from this administration.
Joe Eichelhoff?
Well, genuine diplomatic initiatives certainly are ongoing, and I hope that Tony and his students are looking at the genuine activities over in Iran of the Republican Guard and the those that are indeed developing nuclear power. Now, does that mean that, I mean, what a thing to say, Tony, and for students to say that Bush will attack Iran, I just think that's not constructive to talk about Bush attacking Iran for a political purpose, and I'm troubled by that. I think I'd rather talk about rock music rhetoric, Tony. Really, I'm interested,
do you think that any politicians in Washington are beyond attacking a country for political purposes?
I want it not to be so, and I certainly think Bush is completely, absolutely beyond it.
Yeah.
And it's important for us to talk seriously and constructively about the solutions in Iran. And I'm not a foreign diplomat. I don't know I certainly don't know the answers, but we've got to be constructive.
Yeah, well, on another international issue, President Bush says the end of Fidel Castro's regime is near, and he had some blistering words for Fidel Castro, and then Fidel Castro turns around and says President Bush is threatening the world with nuclear war and famine. Why bring up Cuba, Tony Palmieri?
It's another example of where our country is completely isolated. I mean, almost the entire globe has relations with Cuba. Our country has most favored nation trading status with communist China. But this tiny country, 90 miles off the coast of Florida, has got to be demonized. Maybe Joe can explain this one to us. It just mystifies me.
Joe?
Well, this is indeed diplomatic purpose. And it's not dropping bombs, but no other country in the world has the Cuban population that we have in Florida and throughout the country. So this is... Well, I don't know if it's pure theater, but it's politics, and it's not constructive. And let's move forward, for heaven's sakes, and modernize Cuba with our example. I'm with you, Tony.
Yeah, well, I'm going to bring up one more issue, and then I'm going to open it up just to all the callers who are online with a variety of issues that we've already talked about to finish off the hour. But we had President Bush yesterday flying out to California to view the damage of the California wildfires, now thankfully pretty much under control. A lot of people were wondering and comparing the federal response to the fires in California this time around to the botched response to Hurricane Katrina. Were you checking that out, Tony Palmieri?
Somewhat, and it was obviously the response to this was much more efficient and professional in the response to Katrina. But, you know, Barbara Boxer, the senator from California, has taken criticism from the Republicans for saying that too much of the National Guard resources are over in Iraq. But, you know, she is correct. Iraq is draining the resources of every state. And so that certainly has made the situation in California more difficult to handle.
Joe?
Well, I think when the news media compare Katrina and the California fires, it isn't helpful and isn't constructive. The California fires are very serious. We had lives lost, for heaven's sakes, and extensive property lost. But I'm pretty much a Federalist, and I'm not sure that President Bush belonged out there. Mm-hmm. And I'll say it again, you know, we have seen the enemy. It's us. We're demanding that President Bush go out there and smile and hug Governor Schwarzenegger. But this was a challenge that was needed to be handled by, and was, by the counties and the cities and the state. And I don't know why Dianne Feinstein, for crying out loud, was in the picture. She's way up in, I don't know, it just was a photo op, and it wasn't constructive, but I guess we as Americans now feel better.
Well, you know, I just told callers who are all waiting that I'd go to their calls in just a moment, and everybody hangs up.
Oh, no.
And they all wanted to talk about state budget stuff or cigarette tax or whatever, and we had already covered those, and I wanted to make sure we talked about some of the main issues. As other callers call in, what do you think, Tony Palmieri, was significant this week that we haven't talked about that you think deserves some more attention?
One thing on the state level was the Republicans expressing some discomfort with J.B. Van Hollen, mm-hmm. the Republican attorney general. They apparently think he's not conservative enough, which I find laughable. You know, the attorney general's office is a stepping stone for the governor. The governor's office, and if you were going to advise someone how to become governor out of that office, you'd probably give them two pieces of advice. One, don't drink and drive, and two, you know, don't get on the side of wingnuts. I mean, I'm sure from Van Hollen's perspective, he's trying to interpret the law in as neutral a way as he can, which most people would see as the proper role of that office. So I think he's taking some unfair criticism from the Charlie Sykes wing of the Republican Party.
Yeah, they're saying that he's spending too much time in Madison and being turning liberal, Joe Engelhoff.
Yes, well, I thought the ruling yesterday was a great non-liberal ruling, but again, as Tony said, I think that A.G. Van Hollen is looking at the law and doing his best to interpret it, but his interpretation and his specific and detailed letter about the illegal aliens, the Department of Registration and License and Registration, needing to check the citizenship status of applicants, I thought was very good. Very good. I have another issue that was interesting, if you don't have callers.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you what issue you thought was significant this week that we should talk about.
Well, something came up yesterday, and I was just thrilled to see it. Small thing, a Democrat senator, Jim Sullivan from Wauwatosa, plans to introduce legislation that would require health care providers to provide patients with pricing information. Hallelujah that this is a Democratic senator. And hallelujah that somebody is, more people are seeing the importance of us consumers knowing the price of healthcare. My husband and I are on a very high deductible just because we want to be responsible for our spending. So I spend a lot of time on the phone, and it's very, very difficult to get cost figures. So I'm thrilled about it.
Yeah, are you thrilled about that, Tony?
I think Senator Sullivan was one of the senators who said Healthy Wisconsin is dead, mm-hmm. Unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a positive step. But I hope the Democrats are not going to back away from Healthy Wisconsin. I mean, that would be a very rare example, unfortunately, Healthy Wisconsin of a true reform that the rest of the country could look toward. I mean, Wisconsin used to be known as the state that other states could look toward for reforms. And even though Healthy Wisconsin obviously needs more hearings and probably needs some work, it's an example of one of those reforms. And I hope they're not planning to move away from that in the interest of some of these more milder reforms, which, by the way, Joe, the Republicans will probably fight it anyway, right?
No, they'll fight it because it's not reform, much less good reform, because when the price is zero, the demand is infinite. We've got to move to, it's an overworn phrase, but consumer-directed, consumer-empowered health care. Until we know the cost of what we're buying, and until we have to make choices about whether we're going to pay for this type of hip replacement or that type of hip replacement, we are going to have rapidly escalating health care costs. First things first, and that's to control the cost of health care by informing, empowering consumers.
But, Joe, Healthy Wisconsin would have reduced the cost from $17 billion to $15 billion in our state. If we're really concerned about controlling costs, why didn't you get behind Healthy Wisconsin?
Because, first of all, I think the reduction in cost is smoke and mirrors. It's a reliance on supposedly eliminating a layer of enterprise, the insurance agents, insurance companies, which have come up with more and more creative and helpful forms of insurance for us. The real savings in healthcare has got to be when we decrease utilization, when we actually make important decisions based on cost and ability to pay. And that doesn't mean on life-threatening situations, but it means we've got to get a handle on day-to-day healthcare decisions.
And let's go to a caller. Tom in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. When you're talking about that photo op or with the president in California, I just want to know is why is the federal government's responsible? I know they're responsible to help put out the fire. Why are we think responsible to help them their houses? Because it's a lot of houses. One person, my house, they burned down. Federal government's not going to show up to help me out.
Yeah, losing a lot. He said the federal government's not going to help him out if his house burns down. Tony Palmieri, you want to talk about the government's role in these things?
Well, the federal government, by our Constitution, is supposed to be concerned with the general welfare. And, you know, to me, the idea that the federal government should not and, or could not intervene in something as horrific as those fires, I mean, that's appalling. I think most Americans would look at that and say there's got to be some federal role. Even if it is helping out with funding, there's got to be a federal role. I think our Constitution and, you know, basic decency require it. Any state should not be expected to handle something like that horrible on their own.
Joe?
Tony, I don't know if the state could handle it on their own or not, but certainly if they needed to call in federal helicopters, they can call in federal helicopters. I disagree about the dollars. I don't know what dollars are available and what pots are available, but it's lots of government dollars. Does President Bush have to go out there to let people know that we people all over the country are paying for these folks who decided to live in fire-prone areas?
Joe, we are literally using American tax dollars to put out fires in Iraq.
Absolutely, and that's the role of the government is defense.
I hate to keep coming back to Iraq, but in the Bush administration, everything has to be judged according to the blank check for Iraq. If we can put out fires in Baghdad, we can certainly put out fires in San Diego.
The blank check in Iraq is for the federal purpose of the defense of the country. Now, the blank check in California is a principle of Bush's presidency that says, should the federal government be involved here?
We'll have to have that be the last word because we're out of time. You two are a great pair. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Joe Egelhoff is editor of FoxPolitics.net and Tony Palmieri, associate professor of communications at UW Oshkosh. Thanks to Leo Duran and to Karen Prager for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.